I'm Bill Kovarik, and I'm a professor of communication at Radford University. That's my day job. My scholarly interest is in the history of renewable energy, and specifically ethanol.
Well, a lot of things, right now it seems like, to some people, ethanol is a brand new thing, but it's not, and you helped to write a book about 25 years ago about ethanol and its background in the nation. Tell me about that.
The Forbidden Fuel was the name of the book. It was published in 1981 by Boyd Griffin. It was a smash hit as far as libraries were concerned, but didn't get much circulation outside of them. But it was a very good book because it opened up the history of ethanol. We were very proud of it, actually. It opened up the history of ethanol for the first time for a lot of people. We had heard anecdotally from various people, especially Midwestern agrarian populists, oftentimes conservative Republicans, people like Senator Carl Curtis of Nebraska and some others, who remembered the 1930s very well and the push to create alcohol-blended service stations in a lot of different states. They had agrol service stations in the Kansas-Nebraska area around Atchison, about 2,000 service stations from Kansas City to Lincoln and some others. These were 10% ethanol in the 1930s. Those service stations were closed down amid price manipulations and a little bit of, I guess you could say, oil industry skullduggery, some technical accusations that I don't think were very accurate or true at the time. There was a market issue at the time, just like most of the 20th century. Ethanol was a little bit more expensive than oil, and oftentimes the oil industry made sure that it stayed that way. And so that was the kind of market manipulation that you could expect at the time. Ethanol goes way back, though. We found when we started researching the book, it wasn't just the 1930s. It was the 1906 Teddy Roosevelt free alcohol bill that lifted a tax that had been imposed in 1861. And so we asked the question, well, what about that tax that was imposed in 1861 on alcohol, and why was it imposed on anything other than beverage alcohol? And it turned out that there was an industrial alcohol market that was part of the lamp fuel industry. The lamps of America were lit by alcohol and turpentine throughout the 1830s and 40s and 50s. It was by far the cheapest and best fuel. Kerosene came along, and it might have replaced some of the alcohol fuel markets, but instead there was a tax on alcohol, and so that made alcohol fuel in 1861 much more expensive than kerosene, and in effect, the oil industry was born with a subsidy. And from there, about 40 years, 45 years go by, Europe is starting to really get interested in alcohol as a fuel for automotive engines. These brand new things, these horseless carriages, can run on kerosene, gasoline, benzene, alcohol. And the farmers say, you know, we're losing our market for horses and horse feed. Couldn't we get some part of that market back by supplying the fuel for these horseless carriages? And it would make sense in countries especially where there were no oil deposits. So all throughout Europe, you have a lot of experimentation, a huge degree of interest. The agriculture minister of France in 1901 holds an exposition and tries to get all kinds of uses for farm alcohol that would help offset some of the surplus crops and, you know, try to keep the markets stable. Because after all, it's, as people in the Midwest know very well, it's the last bushel that sets the price. If you have a demand for 100 bushels and you have 101 bushels of supply, then you have a price that is pushed down pretty far. So if you can take care of that one extra bushel of supply of whatever it is and feed it out to some kind of market that absorbs surplus, like an industrial market, then that helps stabilize the price quite a bit. So that was part of the idea of the French alcohol program. And that was adopted in more than 40 industrial nations throughout the 1920s and 30s, including the United States. The U.S. got very interested. Iowa State Department of Chemistry was very interested in promoting alcohol fuel throughout the region, and the state legislatures of Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri, and I believe South Dakota tried to pass tax incentives, the kind that we have had today for 20 years, state-level tax incentives, for ethanol blends, and were not able to do so because of political opposition and some legal maneuvering on the part of the oil industry. And we had in our book a pamphlet that we found at the American Petroleum Institute headquarters of the power pig. This was the power alcohol pig feeding from the taxpayer's trough. And who would pay for corn alcohol was the headline. And it turns out that you, the taxpayer, and you, the motorist, are all going to pay for corn alcohol. But the real question was, you know, why do we pay to the oil industry and export those dollars instead of keeping them in the neighborhoods where, you know, we can have value added to these farm crops?
Well, one of the things you said that was really interesting was you said the petroleum industry was born from a subsidy.
Right.
And I just think that I just latched onto that because I thought, you know, that's what they keep hitting on here. People keep harassing the ethanol industry about being subsidized.
You know, historically, really, they've always wanted it both ways. They want subsidies and regulation and credits when it works in their favor, but when it doesn't, when it works against them, they say, oh, we don't want those nasty subsidies and those terrible credits. And this has been pointed out before by a number of scholars that the oil industry will, you know, use whatever tactic it can. And, you know, one of the things that we have heard recently is that the oil industry is once again concerned about the rise of alternatives and is preparing to produce enough oil to push the price of gasoline down at the pump, which will be good news for consumers, but could mean hard times for some of the ethanol industry in the coming year or so. This happened, of course, the oil industry tanked the market, as they say, in the 1980s, and they did it again in the late 1990s because the alternatives were getting too firm a foothold. So this is their tactic. It's not entirely ethical, but it's certainly not, you know, illegal per se, except if they do it as an antitrust combination. And there's a story here to tell. There's a historical point that, if you don't mind, it's just going to take a minute, but I would love to tell this story, okay? And as we approached World War II, and it became pretty clear that there were war clouds on the horizon, Standard Oil made a secret deal with IG Farben, the German chemical industry, to basically do everything they could to slow down the war machinery of the United States. And this was exposed by the British Security Coordination, and it's pretty well known now. It's been very well documented. It was also exposed by the Truman War Investigating Committee in 1942, and Truman was just furious about it. The main critical war material that was short was synthetic rubber. And the British actually had anticipated this, and they had smuggled some chemists from Poland into the Midwest in order to help Midwestern industrialists and chemists start developing a synthetic rubber process that was based on alcohol from grain. Now, the oil industry had a process that was based on synthetic rubber from petroleum, but that process had a lot of flaws, and they hadn't really worked on it very hard because they had agreed, again, with IG Farben not to work on it very hard, and actually Standard had filed lawsuits against Firestone in November of 1941 to try to get them to stop their experimentation with synthetic rubber from oil. So the whole field was a total mess. And it took Midwestern farmers about 2 years working very hard to catch up with the demand. But the, you know, originally the war plans called for two-thirds of the tires to come from petroleum. And in the end, three-quarters of the rubber for tires and all the other critical war machinery came from grain, from Midwestern farms, and from a tremendous amount of effort that took place in the Midwest.
When you look at what's happening today, now, and how ethanol is being portrayed in the media in a positive sense, I'm not talking about some of the negative stories, but the positive way that ethanol is being promoted these days, especially its environmental benefits, its patriotic benefits in terms of national security and that kind of thing, do you think they're going to be successful this time, even if gas prices go down and you have those kinds of factors working against them? Do you think maybe the ethanol industry has a better backing this time to really make it more successful?
I sure do. I think we're just at the tipping point, and I see an awful lot of momentum towards success, finally, for this industry. The people who have built this industry are very tough. They're very hardworking. They've been through a lot, and they're not about to let the opportunity slip through their fingers. I don't think there's much that the oil industry can do. but it's very important that the political will remain, and that the average American understand that our national security, along with our environmental future, is on the line here. It's not going to cost that much more. If anything, it might be a heck of a lot cheaper, actually, to have an ethanol-fueled economy. But, you know, none of us would object to paying a dime or a quarter or even 50 cents a gallon more if we thought we were building a sustainable future for our kids and our grandchildren. And that's what we have to consider that this could do. I don't think it's a perfect solution. I'm not sure there is a perfect solution, but for all Americans, it is a tremendously hopeful time. But the opportunity is fraught with peril as well. We could see a time when the Persian Gulf closes down, when the darker elements at work in the Middle East have their way with some of the oil fields. And in that sort of case, this isn't just something that we would be doing for our grandchildren. This is something that we might be doing so that we could have fuel next week. So that as an insurance policy, as something for the environment long term, and as just a plain common sense, it seems to me that this is an industry that has to succeed. There's a lot of people who certainly want it to. I mean, it's like, just like in the 1970s, ethanol has become like motherhood, apple pie, and the flag.
Bill, I've taken up enough of your time on a Friday evening at this point, but what I'm going to do on the website is refer people to your website, because there's just a wealth of information there, historical information about ethanol that I think is really, really very interesting, and people should really take a look at that.